The Jason Rance Show.
Jason Rance hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he has, as always, the details for us exclusively.
Jason Rance, our Seattle guy, is with us now.
Jason Rance, always great to have you in focus. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, I think you're all right, and thanks for being on the show.
An update on what's happening in your Pacific Northwest.
Seattle crime is getting worse, especially in SoDa. We'll take you through exactly what's happening. Speaking of getting worse, the relationship between Caitlin Collins and Don Lemon, or Don Lemon, over at CNN is deteriorating. We'll tell you how. Plus, we'll take you through actual data surrounding the impact of vehicular pursuits in Washington state, the ban on vehicular pursuits that some folks on the left pretend doesn't actually exist. The data does exist. It's not good for the Democrat argument. We'll tell you how this hour on the Jason Rance Show. We're going to get to those stories and so much more. So let's get into it.
The monologue.
So Chief Adrian Diaz of the Seattle Police Department did an interview with Frank Summerall over at MyNorthwest.com. That is the parent website for KTTH.com. And he argued, well, let's say it this way. He framed his optimism about crime in Seattle in what I thought was an odd way. He's not wrong in how he frames it. It's just the framing is odd to me. Here it is.
We've actually started to see a drop in violent crime. But we have seen, you know, homicides stay pretty consistent. And that is our growing concern. This month alone, we've actually seen a 30% drop in violent crime. However, our homicides are still staying steady. So, you know, this is the work that we really, really are still committed to staying focused on.
I get his optimism. And I certainly understand that violent crime doesn't just consider homicide, right? We're talking about felonious assault. We're talking about rape, for example. But when you've got a homicide rate or homicide data that is going up, I don't know how you can say you're optimistic about the future of crime in Seattle. Because when we're talking about crime, homicides being high is one reason why people are alarmed. Now, if you have a lot of car break-ins, which are not violent crimes, then what ends up happening is you have a certain kind of sense of the crime issue. You're not scared necessarily walking down the streets. You're not scared leaving your door unlocked. You're scared about leaving your car unlocked. But you're not worried about your personal safety. But when you've got homicides going up, which not only last year did they go up, but January of this year is two higher homicides than January of last year. That impacts our general feeling of safety and security. Now, it does just so happen that a large chunk of the people who are being subject to these murders, certainly recently, are homeless. And Chief Adrian Diaz made that point.
Out of the six homicides that we've had this month, four are related to homelessness. And that is one of the biggest challenges that the city faces, is just having, you know, making sure that we have a comprehensive homeless plan to be able to address a lot of the social issues that, you know, we're experiencing on the street in patrol.
So it is, I don't know how to explain this in the sense that I get what he's saying is that it's maybe other homeless people shooting other homeless people, but all this does is remind us about how dangerous the homeless population is in Seattle, which, again, when you're walking down the street and you're surrounded by homeless people and you realize that there's a high homicide rate amongst the homeless, you're looking at them and saying, well, that means they're armed. Some of them are armed, which makes you feel even less safe while you're walking around. So again, while I hear him, and he is correct to say that quote unquote violent crime is down, I would not frame a scenario where you're seeing an uptick of homicides as you being optimistic. It feels wrong to me. And we know that things are not getting better. In fact, now this.
The interview.
So the city of Seattle continues to deal with broken down, dangerous, homeless RVs. The county is looking into a parking lot that they think is going to solve this problem, but of course it's not going to even make a dent in it. And one particular neighborhood that's being impacted, particularly the businesses, is SoDa. SoDa Business Improvement Area's Aaron Goodman joins me on the line. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
Afternoon. I feel like the last time you and I spoke, it was about pretty much the same issue, at least homelessness and crime. Have things improved at all over the course of the last year or so in SoTo?
No, things are significantly worse. We have just seen an increase in really blatant crime over the last 18 months.
What kind of blatant crime? What are some examples?
Well, people are, you know, going, we have businesses that are being broken into multiple times a week where we have full video cameras, we see what's happening, and the people don't seem to have any fear of being caught. They will store the stolen goods right outside of their vehicles. And so we definitely see just a general sense of lawlessness.
Do you understand why they're doing this? I mean, they know that they can get away with it.
Well, we have, and I've said this numerous times, not everyone living in an RV in SoTo is engaged in crime. However, we have specific RVs that are being used as organized crime platforms, whether it is for organized drug selling, we have organized human trafficking, and we have organized theft. And this is folks that are taking, you know, $60,000, $70,000 worth of merchandise. Wow. With one individual last year, we know because he sold it back to other people that he had taken in about $80,000 from one business alone. And at that point, if you're staying in an RV and you're bringing in $80,000, that's a choice. That's, you know, they are using it as a way to hide their other activities, because for the 2 years during COVID, the city wasn't paying attention.
Exactly. So what's the city been telling you recently?
We are very optimistic, or hopefully optimistic, by what we hear from the mayor and from the mayor's office. You know, I know that the mayor gets it, but as I'm sure you can understand, my businesses need a whole lot more, a lot faster. And so, especially after 2 years of these problems being completely ignored.
But I guess, why do you have such hope? I know he's saying the right things, and I agree with you.
Right.
I've heard some good things coming from him, but I haven't seen any action beyond a little bit on 3rd in downtown Seattle.
We have seen an increase in RV remediations in SoTo, and they started in March of last year.
Yeah, but you see the problem's getting worse.
The crime problem's getting worse. We are seeing, you know, when you don't move one of these encampments for 2 years, the amount of accumulated debris, garbage, biohazard, rats is significant.
Yeah.
So it is, that part of it is better. It's not even close to where it was in 2019, but we have seen some improvements, because what happens is when the RV remediation group comes through and all the garbage is cleaned up, that business gets a little bit of a break. And yes, we know it's moving around the corner and that's not a permanent solution, but it does spread the impact around a little bit. You know, during COVID, we had a couple of essential businesses whose employees did not have the privilege of working from home, who were keeping the city running, whether it was through creating PPP or hand sanitizers or just, you know, providing essential functions, who were literally surrounded on three sides, whose employees couldn't park anywhere near their business, who had to walk this gauntlet to get to work. So the fact that we are seeing RV remediations and movement is an improvement.
Have any businesses just decided to close or leave as a result of all this?
Yes. I have had, it's unfortunate, but we have lost more businesses in the last year and a half due to public safety than we lost due to COVID.
Yeah.
Because of the essential nature of our businesses, you know, a lot of them really fought to stay open during COVID, and now they're tired and they're exhausted and they're not getting help or support. And when they talk about what they're having to deal with, they don't feel like anyone's listening.
What are some of the businesses that have closed due to the public safety aspect?
So I'm not going to name them, because I think that for the most part, there is a fear of retaliation. And businesses, you know, before COVID, I had a whole list of businesses that would talk to the media or talk on camera. And since COVID, that list is very short. We had a lot of businesses that had negative repercussions from media awareness during that, you know, 2020, 2021 period. Yeah. So at this point, when someone's willing to talk for themselves, we always are happy to make that opportunity available, but I have to kind of protect my business.
No, I hear you. God forbid a community actually understand the problem. But anytime anyone says anything about the homeless, you get a small group of rabid activists who like to go on the attack. So I totally hear you. Do you have just a number of the businesses that have closed?
Again, I'll give you a number, but the number doesn't really give scope. I think we're at about 7, but some of these businesses are small mom and pop shops that are small. One of these businesses was a food distributor that takes 2 full soda blocks. So the impact of the business leaving, because, you know, if you have an office and the lawyer moves out, an accountant can move back in. When you've got 2 full blocks of cold storage, it's not that easy to find a new tenant.
Yeah, and actually he was someone who spoke out about what happened, but I know he faced some pushback as a result. So we won't say his name again, although I do think I interviewed him. We've been talking. It's one of those things where maybe that was part of the problem. Aaron Goodman is from the SoTo Business Improvement Area. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Monologue.
So it's generally not a good idea, in my view, when you get the government mandating certain kinds of housing requirements on a local level, that is something that is best left to the locals. We're dealing with it here in Washington State with a series of bills being considered. But I wonder if we should turn our attention to New York, where they're doing something very simple or similar in that Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, proposed affordable housing plan requiring municipalities to build, quote unquote, affordable housing. But folks are saying the way that this plan would unfold would really devastate the local communities. They say this one is Andrew Garbiano, who is a 2nd Congressional District Republican. Not only does this proposal seek to supersede local authority to regulate zoning, but its impact would have disastrous consequences for quality of life. Our community simply cannot handle a monumental increase in population density. Now, this plan basically says across the state, we're going to see in New York about 800,000 new homes over the course of the next decade. And it would offer requirements on the local level to build the so-called affordable housing. You get some incentives, I suppose, but they say some of the requirements would be that MTA, their metro, their stations would rezone the surrounding area for quote-unquote higher density residential development. So in other words, areas that generally have not been zoned for high density populations, just a whole bunch of more people with a whole bunch of more homes, they're going to change it and say, yeah, now you can actually build there. But a lot of the folks who are living on the ground say, but our city cannot handle that. Our infrastructure can't handle that. We don't have businesses that are going to be able to handle this. And by just adding a whole bunch of different people into a neighborhood, you're not necessarily allowing us to grow in a way that is natural. And some cities don't want to grow. They just don't. But you have this claim of we're in the middle of a housing crisis. We need bold actions. And you take that position to the point where you, instead of convincing a community that they should maybe allow more investments in housing, you're just ticking them off and you're making them resent the housing that ends up going up. And by taking away local control, giving it to someone like Kathy Hochul, who doesn't know what it's like living in, say, you know, Long Island. She doesn't know what it's like living there. But the people who run the city, who live in the neighborhoods, they do know. This one-size-fits-all approach is just so odd, where we treat every single city, every single neighborhood, exactly the same, as if there's no differences at all. Just it ends up ruining the quality of life. There are a lot of people who decided to move into certain neighborhoods, and looking just at Washington State, there are a whole bunch of people who decided to live in Mukilteo or Edmonds because they like the size of the city. They like not just the look and feel of the community. Like they're getting the vibes that they get. They like it. They appreciate it. They feel at home. But they like the fact that it's not going to, or at least they didn't think it would, just grow and explode. Because that's not the life they wanted to live. If they wanted that, they would live in Seattle or Tacoma or Spokane or Everett. But instead, they chose those cities. And all of a sudden, you've got here in Washington State telling those cities, oh, no, too bad. You're going to have to grow the way that we want you to. That breeds resentment. Resentment that I totally understand.
The interview.
Well, no one seems to want an airport in their county. And one, say, representative is saying, okay, maybe we need to redo this whole process as we decide where we're going to put a new airport, if we're going to put a new airport anywhere. Joining me on the line is State Representative Tom Dent, Republican from Moses Lake. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So you've got this commission out there that has been deciding potential locations for a new regional airport. The top three locations, I guess, two are in Pierce County. One is in Thurston County. We got word this week that the chair doesn't think any of the options will move forward. You've got a lot of grassroots campaigns saying, no, 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 not here. We don't want it. Right now, where do you think things stand?
Well, I think right now, I think the chair is right. None of these locations are suitable for what we're looking for a new commercial airport. I mean, we're talking an airport similar to what, SeaTac is, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, what we're doing is we've, myself working with Representative Fye, who is chairman of the Transportation Commission, and we made this commitment here about 2 or 3 weeks ago that we're going to find a bipartisan solution to this, and we're working on that. We've drafted a new bill to restart this commission, to give them new criteria and a new direction on how we're going to look for a site, if there is a site available for a new airport, but do it in a different fashion, because this one basically said, come back, you know, with a short list and then a preferred site. Well, then that is what has caused the issue, is the preferred sites. And there was still too much, information we needed to know before we could do that, you know, about the sites. And, you know, there's a lot of things that weren't considered, like airspace requirements, proximity to terrain and those kind of things. Right. So, you know, there was just a lot to do. So our new bill, you know, is going to spell it out that, okay, we're going to look at all these things.
Yeah.
And number two, we're not going to just come back with a short list. We're going to come back with every site we look at with the pros and the cons, and then we'll see if we can find something that would work. And that's what we really need to do. And also put a little more effort into looking at our existing airports to see if there isn't one there that could fit the bill. And so,
like, you expanding, know, you're saying expanding, you know, maybe, yes, Payne Field, yes, or any of the other regional, yes, ones.
Absolutely. You know, and to see what that looks like. The next thing is, you know, our airports of the future most likely are going to look different as we're seeing, you know, new technology come in aircraft. So that will change some of these things. And but, you know, this is all about SeaTac reaching capacity, and it's estimated will be at capacity by 2032. So, you know, that being said, that means what we have is what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And as our state continues to grow, there's going to be a demand for air travel. So, you know, that's what we're going to have to look at.
Isn't the reality at the end of this that there's always going to be someone who doesn't want it in their neighborhood, and yet we're going to have to do it, potentially, right? That we're never truly going to make anybody happy, which is something, like, I wouldn't want to live next to an airport. There's no doubt about it. I would be vocal if they decided to put one near where I live. But at the same time, we do know that it is necessary to at least expand our current airports and or add one. And not everyone's going to be happy.
Well, that's true. And so, you know, we have to, you know, we find a place that works. We want to, you know, affect the minimum amount of people that we can. And that's reality. And yes, some people don't want to be near an airport, and some don't have an issue with it. You know, I don't have an issue with it. I live next to an airport. But, you know, that being said, the one thing that we have not done in this country, in the United States or in our state, is protect our airports. You know, we build an airport, we put it out there where nobody's at, where it's not going to bother anybody, and then we let people build up around it, and pretty soon, guess what? They have an issue with the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And, that, you know, if you look at the pictures of SeaTac in 1947 when they built it, it was pretty wide open. And not so much today, right?
Yeah, so, no kidding.
Those are things we have to look at, right? And we need to take all this into account. But you're right, we're going to have to displace some people. But we have to put the airport in a place where it fits. And we have to look at all the environmental concerns you know, all the environmental concerns. And then, you know, some of these spots that they just picked didn't fit. And but in all fairness, I mean, I serve on that committee. I was a non-voting member, but everything was virtual. And so there wasn't an opportunity to really get out and lay your eyes on the sites and do everything that we really should have done.
Well, and it also seems like there just wasn't a lot of community outreach or community buy-in. Because, look, to the point of not everyone's going to be happy, but if you bring them into the process early enough and you address some of their concerns, or at least try to address some of their concerns, maybe some of their anger won't be as intense.
That's right. That's exactly right. And we didn't, you know, there was reach out through social media and everything being virtual. But you know, we all know that virtual is not the best way to reach out. And it just didn't reach enough people until all of a sudden those sites were on the table. And then when people noticed, and because they just, many of us don't. I mean, I'm on the computer a lot. I pay attention to the virtual world, but that's because of my job. If I wasn't doing this job, I probably wouldn't pay that much attention, right?
Well, I do this for a living, and I had no idea that there were meetings. So there you go. I don't think the average person is going to have access to any of this. So I'm glad that there is a pause, and it sounds like there'll be a restart. I think that that's necessary. At the same time, I do hope that folks at home who might be impacted by this, particularly, I would guess, in Pierce and Thurston counties, just make sure you're using this as an opportunity to get more involved early on. This is your opportunity to get involved at the restart and have a say in all of this, and also have an open mind as to the direction that this commission ends up going. I think that that part is important as well. We've been talking with State Representative Tom Dent of Moses Lake. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
The Jason Rant Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rant.
And the rise of soft on crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rant, is on that.
You keep on bringing her these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
Dr. Martina Morris is a retired University of Washington professor of stats and sociology. And a study that she put out has been used by some Democrats to push forward with the vehicular pursuit ban, pretending that there's no data to suggest that there has been a negative impact on public safety. In fact, quite the opposite. We've gotten safer as a result of the vehicular pursuit ban. Except, as the Center Square reports, that report that she had put together is no longer online. And yet it is still being used to justify one particular side of this debate. But it's got some critics. In fact, Bob Scales is a critic. He joins me now. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. I appreciate the time.
Now, before we get into your critique, you're not speaking necessarily on behalf of or against the vehicular pursuit ban. You're not even speaking necessarily on behalf of your company. But just to give some background as to who you are, in addition to Police Strategies, which is a company you run, you served as the deputy prosecuting attorney for King County, special assistant U.S. attorney for the Western District of Washington. You've been involved in policy advisory roles or advisor roles for the city of Seattle and at least three mayors that I know of. So you're someone with a lot of experience.
Yes. I mean, I've basically used my public and private careers to use data and science to help make good public policy. And that's really the only reason I got involved in this issue, because I saw that there was bad data being used to make public policy.
What is wrong with the data used by Dr. Morris?
Well, when I started reading media reports about the bill and I saw that they were referring to Dr. Morris's analysis, I went to her website, which had the data, and I saw that the data that she was collecting came from this organization called Fatal Encounters. And it's just a media guy who got together and started doing crowdsourcing to pull together data, mostly on officer-involved shootings. And because we work a lot with use of force data, I have looked extensively at that database, and I knew, number one, that the database is incomplete and inaccurate, and number two, the database is not designed and was never designed to collect data on traffic fatalities. So that was what Dr. Morris was using, and I realized that the data she had was inaccurate.
And the data has been propped up by Senator Monica Dhingra, who is the Democrat who is refusing to even bring up a vehicular ban revision to a committee. She's in charge of the committee. She's saying no, and she's using this data. So what did the data that was presented by Dr. Morris suggest?
So Dr. Morris said, and again, this is all based on media reports, on blogs, on social media. This is where she's getting her data from. So she said that in the year and a half before the police pursuit restrictions were put into place, compared to the year and a half after, that traffic fatalities related to police pursuits dropped by 73%. And that is the number not only by Senator Dhingra, but Representative Goodman has recently been using those exact numbers as well. And everybody that is opposed to the relaxing police pursuit restrictions uses Dr. Morris's data.
What is the actual data?
So we do not do research on traffic fatalities. This isn't my area of expertise, but I knew that Washington State has a traffic safety commission.
Mm-hmm.
And the Traffic Safety Commission receives $12 million a year, and they have 6 full-time data analysts, and their goal is to reduce traffic fatalities in Washington State. So I went to the Traffic Safety Commission, I sent an email to one of their analysts, and I said, do you have data on police pursuit fatalities? And he said, yes, we do. So I said, could you send it to me? So he did. And then I compared the data from the Traffic Safety Commission, which the Governor Inslee is the chair of the Traffic Safety Commission. And I compared that data with Dr. Morris's data and found that it's completely different.
Yeah. It's dramatically different, right? Because you looked at the number of victims from police pursuits between 2017 and 2021. Dr. Morris says that number is 13, which, by the way, that's 13 too many, but that's not a dramatic number, at least not as dramatic as some folks are claiming, but that number is actually 3.
Correct. And that is for deaths related to, that is for pedestrians. So
yep.
what Dr. Morris terms innocent bystanders or innocent deaths. So these are pedestrians and passengers that were killed during related to a police pursuit. So she claims the number is 13. The Traffic Safety Commission says the number is 3. So what Dr. Morris is claiming now is that, well, the Traffic Safety Commission doesn't collect all the data that's there and that they undercount. But the problem with that argument is that Dr. Morris actually undercounts the number of drivers who are killed in police pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
So she claims that number in the last 5 years is 10. The Traffic Safety Commission says it's 15. So basically, Dr. Morris only wants to inflate the numbers of innocent bystanders that are killed, not the number of fleeing suspects who are killed.
We're talking with Bob Scales of Police Strategies. He is responding to some of the data that is being used to justify the vehicular pursuit ban here in Washington State. The data, as he sees it, is actually not nearly as compelling as the folks on the left want to pretend. It turns out you found out that Dr. Martina Morris, I guess, criticized your criticism, and now you're responding to her criticism. So take us through that drama.
Yeah, I mean, all I wanted to do, I didn't want to get involved in this issue. I didn't want to take a position on the bill. I'm not lobbying for and against it. All I wanted to do was to make sure that the legislature was made aware of the data from the Traffic Safety Commission, which is their state agency to collect this information, and make sure that they were using that data to make public policy and not false and misleading information from Dr. Morris. So Representative Rule asked me to testify at the House committee meeting, and I signed up to testify just to present the data, not to take a position.
Mm-hmm.
And Representative Goodman would not call on me, but he did allow Dr. Morris to speak, and she presented her false statistics again. And so then I said, well, okay, all I wanted to do was give them the data and get out. But because I wasn't allowed to testify, I sent them a letter And then email exchanges started going back and forth. And then Dr. Morris took down her website and put it back up with more data and more analysis and trying to address my concerns. Dr. Morris now claims that the National Highways Traffic Safety Authority and the Washington Traffic Safety Commission have bad data and that they shouldn't be relied upon and that she has the only good data on traffic fatalities.
Yeah, she's so the one she's we should trust.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and then she sent a letter today or to the legislature basically criticizing my public testimony about her data and about the accuracy of the state data. So I wanted to do was give the legislature the data so they make good decisions. And I didn't want to get into this mess.
And you're not the only critic, by the way, of Dr. Martina Morris. I know we talked earlier about a professor over at Seattle University, Matthew Hickman. He's the chair of the Department of Criminal Justice, Criminology, and Forensics. He also called out the data from Morris as dramatically insufficient. He said, if this analysis was submitted for peer review, it would be summarily rejected as it does not satisfy threshold criteria for quantitative scientific work. So this is not just one person versus another, but you do point out that Dr. Martina Morris, I guess, belongs to some advocacy groups or works alongside them?
Yes. I mean, she represents and she's a member of the Washington Coalition for Police Accountability and Next Steps Washington. And she and her members testified multiple times at the committee meetings. And one thing, another interesting sort of twist on all of this is that Dr. Morris was also a member of an attorney general advisory group that was making recommendations on Senate Bill 5259, which was passed in 2021, which will create a statewide use of force data collection program. And in that bill, the legislature said, we want to collect data on police vehicle pursuits, not just fatalities, but all police vehicle pursuits. And in Dr. Morris's advisory group, she recommended, and the advisory group recommended, that vehicle pursuit data not be collected. And the attorney general approved that recommendation. So this program that the legislature authorized and funded $15 million for will not be collecting data on vehicle pursuits because of Dr. Morris.
Wow. Well, fun times. Nice little twist there. I know you didn't want to get involved in all of this. I'm certainly glad that you chose to because the actual data needs to be exposed. I don't know if ultimately it's going to make any sort of decision or make it any easier for Democrats to move forward and at least hear the bill that would go back to where it was with regards to vehicular pursuits. I have no idea if it's going to make a difference. Probably not, again, based on Moncadingra. And I'm just very curious, did either Moncadingra or State Representative Goodman respond to you?
No. The only legislature that's ever responded to me is Representative Rule. And what bothers
me. A Democrat,
me
by the way, folks. Alicia Rule is a Democrat. So I think it is important to point that out in this case.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is not a partisan issue. I'm not lobbying one way or the other. I just want the legislature to make an informed decision on this important issue. And what bothers me the most about and what really gets me mad is the dishonesty. Mm-hmm. And legislators claiming that they care so much about public safety and about lives, and that they're only doing this to save lives. They're only having these police pursuit restrictions to save lives. And they're using Dr. Morris's data to claim that there's been a 73% reduction in fatalities when that is just false.
Yeah.
And what appears to be happening is that they are simply pandering to these advocacy groups that they want their support because there is no data to back up what they are claiming.
I am so glad that you did some of the work here to highlight it. I think it's incredibly important that people understand where this debate is going and why it's there and how folks use just flat out false data because it backs up their point. And so I'm glad you, who have no skin in the game here, actually spoke up and gave us the details. Bob Scales, is with Police Strategies LLC. Thank you so much for stopping by and giving us that update. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I appreciate you listening to me, since the legislature won't.
Yeah, there you go. Well, hopefully they'll be listening to this interview. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
So I'll be honest, I totally like the drama over at CNN with Don Lemon and Caitlin Collins. Don Lemon, or Don Lemon, has been out for a bit, and it just so happens to be around the time of this drama that has developed between the pair. It happens at a time where their morning show, it's just CNN This Morning, is just in a ratings free fall. We talked with Curtis Houck from Newsbusters a little bit earlier on in the week, who pointed out this is the lowest of ratings that CNN has seen in like over a decade, or maybe forever. This is the worst it's ever seen. And part of it is, and I made this point with Curtis, CNN This Morning doesn't know what it wants to be. It doesn't know if it wants to be kind of this casual, hip morning show, or is it going to be a news show? And I think, you know, if you want, regardless of how you feel about the politics, go ahead and look at Fox News and Fox and Friends. And Fox and Friends Weekend, I think they do a really good job of balancing and doing kind of a hybrid of news and information, but also having fun and being light at times. They obviously, both of the shows lean more towards news than not, but CNN This Morning just can't figure out what it wants to be, and so no one's watching it. On top of that, you know, Don Lemon is the most partisan person on the network. Once they got rid of Cuomo, it became clear that Don Lemon was going to be that sort of next hyper-partisan guy, and he's been leaning into that for a long time. Then you get Chris Licht, who's now running CNN, taking it over from Jeff Zucker. Jeff Zucker's out. He came in and said, look, we want to get away from some of the partisanship. And then they go ahead and put Don Lemon in a position here in mornings. And even though it's very clearly a demotion, because he went from a solo show in primetime to a co-hosted show in the morning, it is still saying, Don, you get to set up the day for CNN. And I imagine that they did not want him to be hyper-partisan, and they did want the show to be more of a mix of news, but also just sort of, you know, lighter topics. He clearly is not leaning into that. He is still hyper-partisan. And what we learned from the New York Post, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, is that they really don't like each other. Don Lemon and his co-host, one of the co-hosts, Caitlin Collins. Mediaite has a report today in reaction to this, because New York Post says they just all got kind of rattled from a conflict out of a December 8th broadcast. And this is what the New York Post wrote. Tensions on the set for CNN This Morning have recently boiled over, with Don Lemon allegedly screaming at co-host Caitlin Collins off camera during an ugly December incident that has left the cast and crew rattled ever since. According to two sources with knowledge of the situation, the 56-year-old Lemon approached 30-year-old Collins following the show the show's Thursday, December 8 broadcast, and unloaded on her in front of staffers as he accused her of interrupting him. So we went back and we pulled a little bit of the moment on air, at least, as they were talking about the Brittany Griner story.
President Biden expected to speak at the White House at any moment now.
And one
he
thing
was
to
briefed,
watch.
Stand by one second. He was briefed throughout the morning. It was a way to confirmation from Griner back in U.S. Custody.
So that was it. He did hold up a finger to her, and I didn't particularly think it was all that condescending, but I guess she might have taken it that way. But it was more about how Don Lemon is responding, because Don Lemon is basically saying, look, I'm the host here. I'm the star. You don't interrupt the star. But that's not what the show is supposed to be, according to some of the insiders, that it was always intended to be maybe not necessarily equal parts for all three, but as equal as humanly possible. So after the story came out in the New York Post, CNN puts out a statement saying, quote, the Post account is wildly overblown and 2 months old. Don, Caitlin, and Poppy Harlow, the other co-host, were friends before they were co-anchors, and they remain friends today. However, Mediaite points out, despite CNN formally pushing back, Mediaite can confirm that the events described by the Post are largely true. though Lemon's alleged screaming is being a little overplayed. And they say that there definitely was an issue that happened after that December 8 broadcast, and then they point to the gender pay gap study, or the, excuse me, the gender pay gap story around U.S. women's national team players. We actually played a lot of this. This was the first time, I think, in well, actually ever, that I said Don Lemon was right. His argument was actually a good one.
But if they are blocked in so many ways and not invested in as
you
much,
guys are,
they
I'm
don't
not
even
sexist.
Have a... They, I know you're
I
not, but they don't
the
even have a shot.
I grew up the only boy in a family of all women. I understand what you're saying. But not everybody, honestly, has the same skill. Not everybody has the same interest in the sport. I think the women should be paid more. I do. But if the
but
men...
The, you're right that not everyone has the same skills because yeah. the women are better skilled.
Well, the women are
no,
better skilled
not.
Against other women. But
not
if the women
drop.
Played the men, they
Why,
wouldn't
what?
Be winning the way that
what?
They win.
Okay, I'm not
going
to get into...
So, now, they go on and on. And it was one of the most ridiculous and just ill-informed conversations about soccer I think I've ever heard. But Caitlin Collins and Poppy Harlow have no clue what the hell it is they're talking about. And frankly, Don Lemon probably doesn't either, but he just happens to be right on this. The teenage boys beat the U.S. women's national team out in Dallas. The Dallas FC team or FC Dallas team of teenagers beat the U.S. women's national team. They crushed them. So what Poppy Harlow and Caitlin Collins are saying is just nonsense. But apparently after that, there was also some considerable tension between the two. Now, adding to some of the drama is Dylan Byers, and he's got a piece out. He does, what is it, Puck News, I think he's with? Yeah, Puck News. He used to be with Politico. He says, these are some of the lowest numbers CNN has seen in almost a decade. Meanwhile, Chris Licht's sole signature programming move to date, the Don Lemon, Poppy Harlow, Caitlin Collins Helm Morning Show, had its lowest rated week since its launch last November. So he's arguing that the tension around the ratings is really what this is about, that there might potentially be different co-hosts who will want to blame the other and say they're the reason why we're having low ratings. I imagine CNN's sort of managerial leadership group is looking and saying, okay, well, we kind of made a big deal about Don Lemon. Is he the star or not? Because if he is, maybe we should capitulate and get rid of his co-hosts. Byers also, according to Mediaite, provided some insight into the dynamics at play at CNN this morning, writing, quote, some sources at the network also mentioned that Caitlin Collins, one of the show's three co-hosts, has had a hard time adapting to her new assignment as a morning anchor. Mediaite continues, multiple sources at CNN familiar with the dynamic of the show told Mediaite that Lemon remains a liked and professional host. Collins, an accomplished White House correspondent who's seen as a star in the network's new regime, is working to adjust to her position as a morning show host. That line there at the end, just sucking up to Don Lemon, was pointed out by some folks on right-wing Twitter saying, yeah, that's the kind of language you get when you've got friends at Mediaite. I don't know. Is this too inside baseball? I find this to be fascinating. And my name is on the show, so I get to talk about the things I find fascinating. One more hour coming up after this.